You're listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes at Lyric Opera of Chicago. Backstage at Lyric features in-depth interviews with the singers, conductors, and creative talents at one of the world's great opera companies. For additional podcast interviews, subscribe to our RSS feed or visit us online at lyricopera.org.
Mezzo-soprano Catherine Goldner and baritone James Westman are backstage at Lyric.
It's just that it's one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever written. I want the audience to go and enjoy a wonderful evening of incredible passion, and I don't know if there's a particular message other than this is what live opera can be. It can take you as an audience member through the emotional ringer along with every person on stage.
You know, it's incredibly exciting, the music, and it's powerful, and the motifs, but I find it incredibly challenging. I think young singers get into this problem where they often think Suzuki's a stepping stone or Sharpless is a stepping stone. It's a very dangerous role for that.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Backstage at Lyric. I'm Mark Travis, music producer for the series, and this time we're featuring a conversation with Catherine Goldner and James Westman, who make their Lyric opera debuts as Suzuki and Sharpless in this season's production of Madama Butterfly. Roger Pines, Lyric Opera's editorial dramaturg, hosts the interview, but before we play it, let me first give you a quick summary of the plot. The story of Madama Butterfly is centered around the American sailor B.F. Pinkerton and his Japanese port wife, Chocho-san, a.k.a. Madama Butterfly. Chocho-san is very much in love with Pinkerton and is ecstatic to marry the man she loves. Caught up in the moment, the two sing one of the most famous duets in opera on the night of their wedding. But Pinkerton must leave Chocho-san and return to America. He promises his young, naive bride that he'll return, quote, when the robins are nesting. During Pinkerton's absence, Chocho-san gives birth to his child. But when the Navy lieutenant returns to Japan 3 years later, it is with his legal American wife. Devastated, Chocho-san turns over the child to Pinkerton and kills herself. And now, on to the interview with Catherine Goldner and James Westman. Roger Pines is your host.
I'm here with Catherine Goldner, who is singing Suzuki in our production of Madama Butterfly, and with James Westman, who is singing Sharpless in Madama Butterfly. And both of you are making your Lyric debuts in this production. How does that feel?
Feels fantastic. Being an Iowa girl, of course, Chicago is one of our goals for all opera singers, I think, especially if you're from Iowa, and it's, you know, kind of for the home crowd a little bit.
Had either of you ever sung in Chicago before?
Well, I have done Margaret Garner. I did Margaret Garner a month ago.
A month before your debut.
And that was exciting. And I've done several Grant Park concerts with the orchestra. But to come here to this institution is just incredible. The company is so warm-hearted, and I've had such a good time. And it's really, I think, one of the best, or the best company in the States right now. As far as I'm concerned, it's wonderful.
Where have you previously sung Sharpless?
I've sung Sharpless at English National Opera, Miami, Pittsburgh, Florida, Canadian Opera Company, and San Francisco.
Oh, and where have you sung Suzuki before?
New York City Opera. That's it.
I think these roles are very underestimated vocally. I mean, what do they require of you?
Mm-hmm. Well, Puccini, for a baritone, is very difficult because you've got the line of Verdi. But yeah, you've got the orchestration of somewhat similar to Wagner. So I find Sharpless as challenging or more challenging than Ballo or Germont, you know. But it's exciting, as I said that before. But, you know, it's incredibly exciting, the music, and it's powerful, and the motifs. But I find it incredibly challenging. I think young singers get into this problem where they often think Suzuki's a stepping stone or Sharpless is a stepping stone. It's a very dangerous role for that. It can be very dangerous.
What does Suzuki ask of you?
Well, I wouldn't say Suzuki is particularly challenging vocally, as long as you've got your middle voice worked out, because
exactly.
There is a lot of middle voice. What is I find quite challenging about it is that, for example, in the famous flower duet with Butterfly, you, as the mezzo, have to accompany the soprano. You've got to match her portamenti. You have to match her volume, match her timing. So you are singing That I would say is the most difficult section of the role, and you don't have, it's not all up to you, right? You are, I mean, yeah, I guess the accompaniment is the good way to put
it. Now, the two of you are in a couple scenes together. So what sort of interaction is there between Suzuki and Sharpless?
Not enough.
No. Not enough. I think we have, in this particular production, James and I have established a relationship between Sharpless and Suzuki that Suzuki has an idea. She's not sure, but she has an idea of what is going to happen and wants to protect Butterfly and yet can't. And I think she blames Sharpless for some of this, for allowing this to happen to her beloved Butterfly.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you created any sort of backstory for her? We don't know who she is. We just know that she's the servant of Butterfly. I mean, we don't know anything about her.
Well, in my own little mind, yes. Personally, I view her as a woman who was also probably a geisha, trained as a geisha, a couple years older than Butterfly. Not a lot older, but a little bit. And she has then trained Butterfly or Chocho-san to take her place. You know, the older guard then trains the up-and-coming new guard. And I think they've been together for years and years. There's more than just a servant-mistress relationship there. They've also been living together for how many years?
They're best friends.
Absolutely.
Right. What's your backstory for Sharpless? I mean,
well, there's so many different options. It really depends on what the director wants. My personal preference is that he maybe is a friend of Pinkerton's brother or something, and they know each other, and there's this element of
The brother said, you're going to be in Japan, Pinkerton.
Yeah.
Look up Sharpless.
Yeah, something similar. I do believe he had a military background, and I do believe that to be sent out to Japan at this time wasn't particularly a great office. So I think there's an element of him being kind of trapped, missing America, and yet being despised at what he sees America doing in Japan, this nature.
I mean, you've made him, I think, much more three-dimensional than I generally see. I mean, frequently he's sort of this blank wall, but you've created this whole very complex characterization for him. Is there a turning point for him in the role where you see what he's really made of?
Yeah, and that's when the child comes out, Equesto. And I think that strikes a completely different turn.
Explain to our listeners what's happening.
Well, that is when Butterfly, when I'm just about to leave, and Sharpless, Butterfly presents the child, Pinkerton's child, and he's just dumbfounded. And this completely changes everything. It changes his relationship to Japan, Sharpless's own relationship to Japan, his own job in this situation, and the urgency of the situation. And it creates a terrific amount of angst in Sharpless, I think. And I think he realizes then, oh my God, what have I done? Or has he done this before and this is enough? And I think he's completely endeared with Butterfly at the beginning, and he almost infatuated in the sense. And I'm not sure whether he's attracted to her, but he's attracted to her essence. He's attracted to her being. And I think once this happens, he sees that she's going to kill herself. And he knows the custom. And I think that's the turning point. It's a very, very abrupt turning point. But Puccini places it so well. It's wonderful.
Now, both of your characters, I think, spend a considerable time on the stage listening.
Oh, yes.
Whether you're listening, you're listening to Butterfly, or James, whether you're listening to Pinkerton. I've always thought that for actors and for opera singers, both, being a good listener on stage really is almost an art in itself. So how do you register as a character while listening to the tenor or to the soprano?
Oh, I think it's in your reactions, absolutely. And I tell this to young artists all the time, that one of the most important things about being on the opera stage is knowing what is going on around you, not just your own part, but you have to know what is being said to you, what is your relationship to that character, and you have to listen and react as if it were new each time. Otherwise, it will not be real.
I completely agree. And I think it's always underestimated that, you know, listening is such an important thing, and to draw the attention to the audience, to the person who you're listening to, it's sometimes difficult because you're on such a big stage. You know?
And I've got to make that point there. During Un Bel Dì, Suzuki is on stage. She is the one to whom Butterfly is singing. So I have to be involved in what she's singing, listening, and not draw focus or attention away from her at the same time. There's a fine line.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Is there a message to this opera? I mean, something that you hope that the audience will be thinking at the end that will stay with them?
For me, it's just that it's one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever written. I want the audience to go and enjoy a wonderful evening of incredible passion, and I don't know if there's a particular message other than this is what live opera can be. It can take you, as an audience member, through the emotional ringer along with every person on stage.
I wanted to talk a little bit about your beginnings, both of you. And now, James, in Canada and also internationally, you were very successful as a boy treble growing up. Weren't you the first boy to sing the solo in Mahler Symphony No. 4?
Yeah, I was with Ben Zander when I was 10.
Wow. What are the most important lessons from those years of performing as a child that you've actually carried with you into your career as a baritone?
I don't know. Singing-wise, it's completely different. When you sing as a boy, you barely use any technique. The technique is really natural. If you try to use the same kind of diaphragm technique we use as opera singers, you'll destroy the voice within a week. So in that sense, it's very opposite. I think in terms of the being away from home, I think that's helped. Because I was away from home a tremendous amount when I was young, and I think it's enabled me to be away from home and feel comfortable with that. I think confidence level on stage, knowing the stage and getting rid of the butterflies, you know, you can redirect them and put them into...
Oh, because you must have done a lot of Amal and the Night Visitor.
Yes, and a lot of solo things and concerts and orchestra concerts. And you get terrifically nervous when you're a child, and therefore, I think as an adult, I think I can handle that a bit better. And other than that, not a lot.
Now, Kathy, you went to the University of Iowa, and you grew up in Iowa.
I sure did.
But did you grow up in a musical environment?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Like, I think, probably the majority of Midwesterners, I sang in the church choir before I, you know, sang in the school junior choir and high school choir. Both parents, although my parents were not professional musicians, they both played different instruments. I mean, violin, trumpet, viola, piano. And it was just taken for granted that all three of us children would take piano lessons at least and another instrument as well and sing.
Do both of you, when you learn roles, do you accompany yourself at the piano, or...?
Somewhat, and then I realize I'm not very good at it. I hire a professional.
Once you finished your training, how did you make your way into the opera business? Did you go the young artist program route, or did you do it some other way?
I did the young artist program. I didn't do very many competitions. I did Cardiff Singer and the George London competition. And I went to San Francisco Opera Adler Fellowship. I did Marilla, and that's how I got into the business, so to speak. And that was very good for me. And also the tremendous education in Toronto, University of Toronto, and the Canadian Opera Company.
Right.
That seemed to really give me a good, solid background in languages and acting. And, you know, you're still learning in this business. You know, you've learned new roles. And
do you remember in programs like that, I mean, do you remember the first time you were exposed to somebody whose career you actually knew about, who you could look at as a sort of, you know, role model, or this is the kind of career I want to have?
Actually, one of the great baritones that I've come across, and there was a terrific amount of, you know, Paolo Gabanelli and fantastic baritones at San Francisco, but one of the first baritones was Cornelius Optoff, and he did a lot of the recordings.
He was Canadian.
Yeah, he was Dutch-Canadian. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of the recordings with Pavarotti and Sutherland.
Right.
And he did Sharpless. When I was 23, he did 5 Sharplesses, and I did 4. And he's a terrific actor, and really quite amazing. I think he's done a role at the Canadian Opera Company for the last 40 years, and I think he's close to 80 now. But he's a terrific singer, and he just stays there and does his own thing. And
so a role model to encounter it very early. That's great. Kathy, did you come through a young artist program?
Oh, this is interesting because, yes, I auditioned for all the young artist program, including Chicago, and couldn't get into a single one of them. And I went to Europe, actually, and studied over there. And instead of doing the young artist program in the States, I was hired in Austrian and German houses. So I was at the age when others are doing their young artist program, I was actually being paid to be a singer. So my young artist program was singing in houses like Salzburg and Kassel, where I remember one week in Kassel, I had to sing Let's see, Cenerentola, the title role. Evita, the title role.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Oh, my
and
God.
I think Hansel was the next night, all in one week.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I kind of, a little different experience.
You both have international careers, but where have you chosen to keep as your home base?
Well, I currently live in Stratford, Ontario. I love it because usually we get the summers off as opera singers, unless you have a festival like Santa Fe or Salzburg. And I get to watch terrific theater there and study the acting in the theater there. It's much different than opera, as I said. It's a round theater versus the big opera stage. And it's close to my family home. It's a farm that I grew up on, a heritage farm, which we bought in 1730 from the Queen, so or the King, I can't remember. But anyway, I do love Stratford. It's a nice place to get home to. I'm not there very often lately, but I'm going home for Christmas.
And Kathy, you are in Salzburg,
I am right? In Salzburg, Austria. I've been there since leaving the University of Iowa, and it's a great home base, I have to say, because I am very, very fortunate that I get to work both sides of the big pond, as we call it, about half the year in the United States and about half the year in various countries in Europe.
Now, you have a daughter, Kathy, and
I
James,
do.
You have two sons. I'm always curious about the reaction that singers' kids have to the roles that singer sings.
Well, my daughter, Anna, has been going to opera since she was three. So she has very good taste, and she knows when a production is very good, and she knows when a production isn't.
Does she tell you what she thinks of your performance?
Oh, yes. Yeah, she did. I took her to Lulu by the way, which, of course, was just done here. And she went to Lulu when I did it at the Met, and she was 7 years old and sat through the entire four-act dress rehearsal. And she went to several rehearsals here with me, and she said, well, you're right, it's bloodier than the one at the Met. But she enjoyed it. I mean, she can get through Alban Berg.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. James, what have your sons?
One of my first Traviatas in San Francisco was with Mary Dunleavy, and my son turns to me in my dressing room and goes, Daddy, you gave that girl a big time out. So it's all in the perspective of discipline, you know, and I thought, oh my God. But it's wonderful that they get to see opera, and I think more children should, and definitely where I come from, there's an education kind of
and
loss
that's
there.
Absolutely something that I feel very strongly about, actually, as a music educator as well, because that was my degree, that I think we expect too little of our children, and thinking, oh, opera is too long and they can't sit still for that long, and I find that to be absolutely not true. If they come into a performance thinking this is something exciting and this is really cool, and you bring enough gummy bears maybe to get them through the performance, they are fascinated by it. And that's why dress rehearsals or matinees or things like that, I think you can, you know, 6, 7 is not too young to start them.
Did you have some sort of revelatory experience years ago when you were just getting to know the art form, which really sort of turned on the light for you and said, this is my future? Did you have an opera-going experience that did that for you?
Well, I did. I mean, the first opera I ever saw was at the University of Iowa, and it was Carmen. And I didn't get to see one until I was about 14 or 15, because it just wasn't available in the area. And I thought, wow, this is fascinating. I never thought there would be a job in it until then I got to college and realized that there was a voice in there somewhere. But...
And James, before you encountered... Joan Sutherland and Richard Bonning, who
were
influential for you before you encountered them. Had you been to much opera?
No, in fact, growing up in the situation I grew up in, I grew up in a hockey town, and I played hockey as well. And I music wasn't considered a viable career, you know, for young boys at that point. And so everyone would call me an opera singer at the age of 10, and I would, you know, scream back and say I'm a concert singer and I do oratorio and
at 10 years
chanson, old. Yeah, at 10 years of age. And that didn't help much in a hockey town. I just got beat up. But so I got bit by the opera bug. I was going to University of Toronto. And, you know, you always want to find these easy courses to kind of get you through. I wanted to go into law, and so I wanted to do the opera course. And I auditioned for the opera course, and they said, we need males, and they gave me the lead in Marriage of Figaro, so... And I never looked back. My studies went down everywhere else except the opera, and so I just kept going.
Can you talk in terms of goals for the future? I mean, either places you'd like to sing, or roles you'd like to perform, or conductors you'd like to perform with, or where you whether you have, I'm curious as to whether you have a, you know, a 5-year plan or this kind of thing, or whether you just take things, you know, as they come.
Well, with the economy, there is a certain level of taking things as they come, but also, especially with a mezzo voice, it does tend to darken and get larger as you get older. And I'm looking at heavier rep and moving into some Verdi and Wagner, and of course, always Strauss, which is sort of my, you know, the basis of my career. But of course, I mean, getting into singing in Chicago Lyric was one of my goals. We all, I think, want to sing in Washington, D.C., Santa Fe, San Francisco, Los Angeles, mm-hmm. Covent Garden, all these big houses, because they also allow you to work with fantastic colleagues, mm-hmm. like we have here. I have to say, I cannot imagine a better cast than what we have for this Butterfly, and it's
with Patricia Rosette, Frank Lepardo,
mm-hmm. James Westman, and just to be on stage and singing this music and in this sort of production quality is an mm-hmm. honor.
My God, a 5-year plan. keep singing. Keep getting hired. No, I want to go into, the second half of the Verdi repertoire for a Verdi baritone, and that's the Iagos, the Rigoletto, Trovatore, Simone Boccanegra. You know, I've got my feet wet with Ballo and Poza and Germont and Ford, and I'm learning those roles and studying them, and I'm excited to have a few engagements in the future that would enable me to do some Trovatores and Rigoletto. But it's you know, for a baritone, you really have to, nowadays, Robert Merrill set the pace. You have to do it all. You have to do everything from Papageno to be successful, I do believe, to do everything from Papageno to Simone Boccanegra. So, and he did that. So, you know, you have to keep your ears clean and your voice fixed.
And finally, what have you been doing in the way of exploring Chicago since you've been here?
Not enough.
The weather hasn't really permitted you to do that much.
And we've been in rehearsal. Yeah. When my daughter's visiting, I did get to see most of the museums, of course. But I'm looking forward to January when we have a couple days off between shows to explore more of the city.
I have been to the Art Gallery, which I thoroughly adore. I think it's one of the best in North America, several times. I just love it. I was here for the election for Barack Obama during Margaret Garner, which was terrifically exciting. And my children have found these wonderful things to do, from water parks to children's museums. And one particular place that I fell in love with is Sam's Wines and Spirits, because in Canada we have a nasty liquor control board, and I hope they're not listening, because my wife's already made it home with some alcohol. Anyway, but it's a wonderful town. I think it's full of culture, full of dreams. I just love this town. It's a romantic town, and yet it's full of sprezzatura. It's a great town. I love it.
Well, we have a performance of Butterfly, and you're due for your makeup calls very shortly. So I'd like to thank both of you, James Westman, Kathy Gulner, and have a wonderful time with the rest of the Butterfly performance.
Thank you.
Thank you, Roger.
You've been listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the curtain at Lyric Opera of Chicago. For additional interactive content and to order tickets, visit us online at lyricopera.org.